So right now, extremely pleased to welcome to the show two guests. The dynamic duo, the minds behind Average Bear DFS, which was once two separate entities, Big Bear DFS and Average Joe DFS, but we're now together for Average Bear DFS. That's correct?
That's correct.
Welcome aboard, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Good.
Thanks, Sean. Doing well,
good,
man.
For a Tuesday.
Yeah. Early in the week, but really appreciate you having us on, man.
Absolutely. It's fun to have you guys on. It's a welcome distraction. We were just talking about the Kevin Durant knee. For me, it's a welcome distraction from the L that I'm going to be taking. Hopefully, you guys weren't on him, were you?
No, I did not have him.
No, I'm like 100% exposed to Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, me too. I had both of them, which I thought was going to be
dope. That's city. Concurrent. I like that.
Yeah. Well,
not now.
Yeah, everything looks good on paper. Anyway, so we were just talking about this. You guys met each other before you were lineup providers and were independent lineup providers, but then you joined forces. How'd you guys get together, and how did Average Bear DFS come about?
Yeah, I'll let Joe jump in and take that. I'll just kind of sprinkle in.
Yeah, it all started like you said, we were both doing our own things, and kind of like everybody started. And I was approached by this guy. He started this website called Sports Vestment, and he wanted to get a bunch of us together. There was a bunch of us included, me, Bear, Clutch, Uncle started with us, Uncle DFS. And so when we all joined and like talked to him and he gave us his idea, we all joined forces and made this one website. And then we started a group chat on Twitter and started to get to know each other more. And me and Big Bear talked a lot, and after Sports Vestment kind of stopped, we kind of all went our separate ways. It was fun while it lasted, but then we went our separate ways, and we kept in the group chat, and me and Big Bear were always in the same group chat talking to each other and talking plays and who we liked. And Big Bear was always a solid cash player, and I always, whenever I shared my lines in the chat asking people plays, they'd be like, oh, that's totally GPP. And I'd be like, I don't know, it looks good to me. So when Bear, this season, NBA was rolling around and a couple guys were saying they were going to team up, and Bear was like, hey, Joe, you want to team up? We can figure out what we're going to do. Like, I'll do the cash, you do the GPP kind of thing, and we'll keep talking and make lines together. And we came up with, obviously, Average Bear DFS with Average Joe and Big Bear. So that's kind of how it all started, I guess.
Nice. And so you guys are doing lineups now, and how's that been going for you? You guys like being lineup providers?
I kind of love it, to be honest with you. I didn't know how much I would. I got into it last season I don't think I even touched NFL as far as like providing and stuff last year. I was pretty bad at NFL last year, but I was really good at season long stuff, and I had won some like high stakes, like Vegas fantasy leagues and stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, I'll give it a try. And I like NBA, so I messed around with it. And then I realized that I did not like NBA or no NBA, I guess, well enough to do DFS at the time. But then I just kind of took it as a challenge and dove in like head first and just became kind of obsessed with it. And, started like, I think in my first month, I was just like crushing 300s out left and right. And like last season, that wasn't super common at the beginning of the year. So I started to feel really confident about it, started to get used to it and stuff. And I was like, maybe I can just start being a provider with this stuff, like some of these other people I'm starting to talk to and find in the community. And I just did it for free. Like, you know, if you want to play this line, retweet, favorite, all that jazz that you see. Lots of fire emojis, all that crap. We started doing that, and like Joe said, then we kind of met doing the Sports Vestment thing, and I would write articles for them, which I loved. It just kind of went from there. And then This year, like, it just made sense for Joe and I to kind of mesh up. A DFS Clutch Boy and another guy kind of teamed up, and we were like, you know what, that's not a bad idea, especially because Joe and I already get along. And we kind of like play to each other's strengths to some extent. Like, Joe's really good at finding those ceiling guys, which is great for GPP and guys that I honestly wouldn't even think about. And he just looks at it very differently. Whereas I'm like really good at finding the floor guys, and it's kind of boring and I grind it out, but I'm just kind of risk averse. And so it works well for cash. So we can provide That's two cool. lineups that are pretty different, you know?
Oh, really? Okay. So yeah, you kind of, you take the best of both worlds and provide two lineups. That's interesting. What about real life? Like outside of the fantasy world, what do you guys do, if you don't mind me asking?
No, yeah, that's fine. Joe, you can go first.
Right now I'm still a student in college. I'm a full-time student. I started off because I live in Wisconsin. I went to UWM, which is Milwaukee, and then I transferred to UW Oshkosh to be with my fiance, so it'd be easier on our lives because the distance was just hard. But now I'm a full-time student. I still have this semester to finish up, and then next semester I should be graduating with my bachelor's in criminal justice. And Bear wants me to change it because I do all this DFS stuff and I would love to get into sports, but that's another topic. But on the side, I mean, other than school, I work at this convention center doing stuff. I'm like a supervisor there for setup stuff, and it's easy work for me because then it's very flexible with school, so it's really easy.
Nice.
I do not have the same flexibility, I guess. Like Joe knows.
Bear's a grown-up. I'm still a child.
Yeah, I'm just like so damn busy. I mean, I'm not super grown-up. I don't have real-life children. I got some fur children. I got a dog and stuff. But you know, I got a wife. I'm 30. And I am a compliance and legal advisor for a bank where we basically make sure that like the advertising is up to par and up to code with all the regulations and all the legal just jargon and stuff like that that's out there. You know, you Got see it. Banks like in the headlines getting sued and stuff like that. I basically try and prevent that from happening.
Makes sense. Yeah, Bear. Yeah, same boat, man. Grown ass man, too much going on.
Yeah.
All right. So this is a question that I like to ask every guest. We all know there's one lineup that got you hooked on DFS when, you know, you first said like, all right, I'll try it. And then there was one turning point where you were like, oh, this is good. I like this quite a bit. What was that lineup that got you hooked on DFS?
Go Bear.
You know, so the first time that I tried NBA DFS, at the time I was actually a much bigger college basketball fan than I am now. After watching so much NBA, it's honestly kind of hard for me to digest college basketball anymore. It's really sad. But so I was like, I really like UK. And so I was trying to squeeze in like John Wall and Anthony Davis on one lineup one night or something like that. And I'm sure, I can't even remember. I'm pretty sure Anthony Davis got hurt that night.
I'm sure so, you said. Like,
there's a 55% chance.
Yeah, minimum, right? I'm sure there was like a hangnail or something like that. So, it's like the masochist in me, like all the lines that I can remember making me want to play were actually not good. Like lineups in the beginning that really just killed me. And like, there was another one where Carmelo Anthony decided to sit with some sort of like BS sickness, like 5 minutes after lineup lock and the rest of my line just killed it. And for some reason, like those are the lineups I remember that actually made me really want to play more. So I don't know
makes
if that
sense.
Means
like that makes a lot of sense problem, to me.
But that's a good, yeah. That's a good mentality right there.
Yeah. That's the true grinder right there. Oh, is what yeah. that is. What about you?
For me, I guess it started, I remember this one line. I remember in the very beginning, my friends from my first roommates got me into DFS, right? It was DraftKings. And I was playing, it was one of those primetime slates, a two game slate. I wasn't playing anything real, like big money yet, because I was, you know, just getting into it with my roommates. And I played a line. It was New England Patriots on a Monday night. For some reason, I needed a low salary running back, and I can't remember his name, but he was like the third string running back from the Patriots. And for some reason, he got all the carries, and he scored 3 touchdowns and like ran for 198 or 199. It was crazy. And I ended up taking like top 10 in a GPP. Like I said, I was like a $1 GPP. I won like $80 and I was pumped. And I was like, I can do this. So, I mean, it started off with me with football, 'cause I love football. I played football almost my entire life before college. And, that was one of the lines. And then I would say last year, right before I started providing for real, I was doing like Bear said, doing the free, you know, free lines, retweet, fire emojis, kind of thing. And, and some, I, played a line, and then some. I gave it to some guy on Twitter, and it hit like 360 or 350, 360, something like that. And he cashed out for like $6,000. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm pissed. He gave me a nice tip, but I was like, I'm pissed. And then he's like, yeah, you would have won. He goes, you would have won the Playboy qualifier. And I was like, oh my God. So it was like, it's kind of like a Big Bear thing where I didn't win, but it was the fact that, you know, I could have done, if I would have entered the right tournaments, I would have just been crazy. But yeah. Well, those are the two that really did it for me that made me think like, you know, I can do this. And yeah. It hooks you when you know you can do it like that.
I know that feeling of not putting the right lineup in the right pool. There's been a couple times this year where I've just kind of like, you know, kind of tried to take it easy, cash game night, 50-50s, maybe a double up or two, you know, because I'm not really paying attention. Yep. Of course, yeah. It goes 350, 360, and you're just like, what good does this do me at first place in a $2 50-50?
There were two times already this year where, and like I said, I mean, I make pretty risk averse cash lineups, right? But sometimes they just go off and like, yeah, you always want to enter them into a GPP and stuff like that. And I try to, there's definitely one, and I'm pretty sure two times where I would have won the Miami qualifier this year had I entered it.
God. So frustrating. All right. Well, let's talk about DFS. Cause like, you know, you don't get to these points where you're making these quality lineups on a very consistent basis, unless, you know, you've got a serious process. So, I mean, what do you guys do? What's the first thing you do when you sit down to make lineups? What are you looking for? What are you looking at? And Joe, let's start with you.
All right. Every sport's different for me. So, I'm a big sports fan, so everything kind of comes at a natural pace. Like I said, I started with football, and I just knew football. So when you're doing a football lineup, you have all week to prepare. So maybe during the week you start looking at some things and then other, whatever. But football for me came naturally, and I would pick those people that really made sense. And then I would try to find those sleepers because, like I said, my brain works more GPP. It always will try to find somebody that is going to be low-owned but has a good chance at scoring really well. So for football, it was more of a natural thing for me. Basketball was harder for me to start just because I didn't watch it as much and I didn't know basketball as much, and it was the sport I at least played in high school. So with basketball, I looked at a lot of Vegas stuff. Vegas is huge. Game totals and pace of games and things like that. When the game total is, you know, tonight was Golden State and Washington, and the game total is like 230-something. So you know that game's going to be just insane, back and forth scoring and more opportunities. Another thing I look for in basketball, a lot of people say it doesn't matter, and I agree to an extent it doesn't, is the defense versus position. But when I say defense versus position, I guess you're looking for matchups, right? You want that person that, right. That or like, perfect example, the Lakers and Portland are really bad against bigs. So you obviously people are going to take bigs against them. So things like that, easy matchups, easy games to target for pace and scoring, for basketball is nice. But then there's a lot of people that do projections, and I know Big Bear has Big Bear's brain as the projection machine. He'll tell you that in his speaking part of this, but I don't really look at too much of the projections. I used to look at Roto Grinders a lot starting out to look at their projections, and I never understood like where they got it from. I understand like I said, when you have a good matchup, they just think they're going to have better scoring nights, so I guess it's a little bit of a guess and check game with that, but you can kind of tell looking into your research, defense versus position or pace of game, who's going to have a better night than others. And that's why I think it's more skill based than luck based for the most extent of these things. Yeah, and then baseball is tricky. I look into a lot of stuff at baseball. Temperature, like when it's humid, the ball travels further. When you're in Colorado, the ball travels further, obviously, with the thin air. When you're playing at Miller Park, which I'm from Wisconsin, so I'll use Miller Park, it's like the top 5 or 10 hitter ballpark in the MLB, so you'll take hitters there. When the wind's blowing out, when you're pitchers, righties versus lefties and stuff like that, and batter versus pitcher is actually, it's kind of like the defense versus position, right. So some people just have insane batter versus pitcher. Like there was one last year, Jose Bautista, like had like six home runs versus somebody. It was insane. And of course he hit two that day. And I was just like, yeah, of course he's going to take him. And there was another day where Jeff Hardy. Oh my God. JJ Hardy.
We're going to pivot over to WWE for a second here.
Classic. I love Jeff Hardy. But anyway, JJ Hardy from the Baltimore Orioles had a good matchup versus somebody, and he was very low owned and talking in the chat. Nobody was on him. I'm like, JJ Hardy's going to hit two home runs or a home run tonight. And you guys are going to be like, what? And he hits two, and it was hilarious. So it's a lot that goes into it in a lot of different sports. Right. You can have a different approaches. So,
right. But I appreciate the idea that, like, you know, I think sometimes people weight projections too much. And, you know, one of the things, and Bear, maybe you can speak to this since your brain seems to be your algorithm, as Joe alluded to. But, like, the thing we have to remember is those algorithms, you know, as great as they are for being, you know, well-crafted and carefully constructed by DFS pros. Truth of the matter is that's like, there's a computer behind that whole thing. You know, there's not a human touch in mid decision making and the judgment calls about, you know, everything there. So, I mean, Bear, you know, Joe mentions this, but I mean, what do you do when you sit down to make lineups?
So, yeah, that's a really good point, and I'm honestly very passionate about that. So I guess it comes from having played sports my whole life, football and basketball and stuff like that, and just generally understanding what goes in it and just watching a lot of sports my whole life. I mean, there were nights where I would literally watch like any game and every game, just at least have it on. And so I feel like I legitimately feel like I'm a really good evaluator of talent. And, you know, my eye test, I would put it up there with pretty much anyone. And so I think that plays a lot into it. And then knowing the nuances of like coaches and, you know, who they like and who's going to get minutes and stuff like that's important too. And you learn all that by actually watching the games. It blows my mind how many providers there are, especially for something like basketball, where it's like really a grind, where they are not watching NBA games. And like, I understand if you're not that into it, like it's totally cool, but then don't try and be a provider then. Right. You know, you can't just make it. I mean, my last job, I did marketing analytics. And so like, I get the numbers behind things and stuff like that. But, when it comes to NBA, like I honestly, Joe and I joke, we call it Big Bear Brain, 'cause I'm like so passionately against projections, and optimizers and crap like that, because like, it'll, you know, some of them it's like, okay, well, yeah, I could have told you that John Wall would go for like 45 or something tonight, but there are others where it just pulls out like random crappy value plays. And there's something within the algorithm that there's like a fault to it that makes some guy projected to get like 7-8x. And the odds of him doing that are probably more like 1 in 10.
I'm pretty sure this week I was looking like Chandler Parsons was always projected to get like 26 points. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. So it just kind of bugs me a little bit. So to Joe's point, I mean, the Vegas stuff is very big. My favorite things to look at are pace and usage. And then knowing how, you know, any sort of injuries or people sitting out resting and stuff like that will affect someone else's usage. I end up, you know, being the cash game guy. Sometimes I feel like I get handcuffed and locked into some chalk that I don't want to play, but I almost feel like I have to, because you just kind of do a quick evaluation of the numbers in your head. Like if someone's going to be 70% owned and they're going to cost you maybe 4,500, like a Corey Joseph recently with Lowry being out so much,
sure,
you pretty much have to play him every night in cash because he's going to be so high owned. And if he does bad, it's not going to hurt you that much because he's also really cheap. But if he does well, you're screwed if you don't have him. So, you know, it's hard to say. I don't look at anything in particular. It's just my general knowledge of watching the games, of learning the trends. And, you know, it's hard to set these out at the beginning of the year, but eventually you start to get some rules in your head, right? So, like, Denver and Brooklyn play really high in pace, and they're really terrible on defense. Like Joe was saying, like the Lakers are horrible against bigs. Portland's terrible against, you know, backcourts. You know, just kind of little rules like that. And then you try and find the nuanced rules within that. So like when the Bucks had a general healthy lineup minus Middleton earlier in the year, and Giannis was playing a lot more point, they were terrible against small forwards, and it was like it was just a recent trend, you know, like when people look at those trending things, sometimes there's too much data going into it, and like you want to take an analysis of like the last five games and then maybe, you know, see if there was anything that would throw any of that data off, you know.
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, I think too many inputs can distract you. You know, if you are paying attention and you know trends in DFS and you're watching games and you are, you know, actually understanding and analyzing pace and DVP and all of those things, projections really just kind of make you doubt your initial judgments, you know, and, you know, that tinkering can really, really be the death of you, you know. I think at some points, you know, we can use tools to maybe notice things that we may have missed. But for the most part, if you're grinding it out on a daily basis and you know these games and you know these teams and you know these rotations, then you know who's going to be able to play, and you should trust your judgment in that. And that's driven by statistics, you know. It's just an opinion. So I appreciate that a lot. You know, I think it's not for everyone. You really have to be steeped in it, but I think that's a good point. So, I mean, Bear, on that point, do you think that projections are one of the biggest mistakes that DFS players make? I mean, are just trusting the projections too much? And Joe, I'd like your opinion on that mistake question as well.
I do think that, man. And like, even talking to a few other like smaller time providers, like we actually get DMs and advice and stuff all the time from people, and I'm willing to help people out, no problem. But, you know, they'll ask you, I get questions a lot, and they'll ask you a question about a player, and I'm like, no, I'm not on him. And then of course I lay out that I'm, you know, generally risk averse. I play cash for the most part. I'm not really scoring big in GPPs or anything like that. I'm not chasing that necessarily. But I'm cashing double ups and head to heads and 50-50s really consistently. And I let them know that. And I'm like, no, I'm not really on that guy. And they're like, well, so-and-so's optimizer, or so-and-so's projections or whatever, have them projected to score XYZ. And I'm just like, man, I don't want to argue with, you know, some roto grinders like algorithm. Like, I'm sure it works really well for them, but you have to remember that those optimizers are probably better suited for people who are entering like max entering lineups and like uploading a spreadsheet or whatever it is. Like, I've literally never uploaded a script into one of the DFS sites. You know, so it's not really for me. But just to touch on something that you were saying earlier, I think a really important exercise that I've recently learned, and not to plug anyone else, but a guy named Fast Eddie Fear on Twitter, I think he works with like FanVice or something like that, who I'm not a member of or anything like that. But he kind of does this thing at the end of the night sometimes where it's like, what did we learn? And sometimes you just kind of chalk it up to like, there is a luck element to it, right? But then there's definitely things that you should be learning. And if you find yourself saying too often, like, oh, this guy blew up, or my guy did really bad and it's just luck, like, you know, maybe you need to look at it a little harder and take some learnings from it.
Yeah, I hear that. No, I try to do that, you know, daily on the podcast and review my lineups, you know, out loud, thinking through what the mistakes and what the decisions, you know, why I made certain decisions, why I didn't make other decisions. And you have to do that. I mean, if you just, you know, if you're kind of in the mindset of like, let's ditch it and move on, then you're bound to repeat the same mistakes. You know, and that gets pretty depressing after a while when you're
making mistakes.
Yo, what Joe, you sounds like you have some maybe a little something to get off your chest here.
Matt, this last week I've just been doing bad with GPPs, mostly because I feel like after All-Star break, it was like the first two or three slates was all chalk. Like the GPP, there was the 50-50s in cash game line was within 3 points of the free play line, and I was just, my mind was blown. But like you said, you have to learn, and I'm just trying to learn from my mistakes with those ones to make up a new process and fix that before it, you know, it just gets too annoying and you just get down on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a fine balance with that, you know, getting on yourself too much and then also making sure that you realize like, oh, this was in fact like just a really screwed up environment since All-Star break. And it's hard to not sit there and think, man, I was really looking forward to post All-Star break because guys aren't, you know, resting as much and it should be a little bit more competitive and just normal. You don't have stupid value out opening up and all that other stuff. So that's important to note.
Yeah, yeah, you can't get too hard on yourself, but you do have to pay attention. So you guys did a tutorial video not long ago near the All-Star break, and one of the conversations that you had was about game selection. You know, and what I mean by game selection is basically like, where do people put their money? Are they putting it in a 50-50 versus a head-to-head versus a double-up versus a GPP? And bankroll management in that respect. And Bear, you alluded to this, and I think I'm much more on your page. Like, I'm primarily a cash game player. I know how to make a cash game lineup. It's always been kind of in my wheelhouse, a little bit more clear to me where I want to end up and how I'm going to get there. You know, and Joe, you mentioned you're more of a GPP player, but I mean, what do you guys, how do you individually or personally approach bankroll management, game selection on a nightly basis?
I know how I should, which is obviously more cash games, 50-50s, double ups, even head to heads. You should be playing more because, you know, that's where, you know, 50% of the people win. You're not winning big money, but you're doubling your money. And if you can do that on a consistent basis, that's how you build your bankroll. And you don't need those 360-point lines to profit twice your money. Instead, you only need maybe these days now, like 300 is most of the time good for cash. So obviously, cash games are the way to go. And like me and Big Bear said on our tutorial video or the Q&A video was to play your cash games heavy, throw some of your GPPs in there, but make sure you're doing it at the right times and the right amount of money, because it's easy to get tricked into those. It's only $3 and I can win 150 grand. It's easy to get into that. And you're like, what if, but the fact is it's a lot harder to cash in a GPP than it is in a cash game.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Bear? What's your like daily grind? What are your rules here?
So just to exactly the same as Joe was saying, like, I know what I should be doing. Tonight I was really bad. And I just like started throwing stuff in all over the place and it was not good. And I wasn't even that comfortable with the lines that I had. But generally speaking, like, you know, you should have a set amount of money, that is not influenced necessarily by like your paychecks or whatever, right? Like you should just have a set amount of money, a slush fund or whatever you want to call it, like kind of set aside. And then ideally you're playing 10, maybe 15% of that amount each night, maybe 20 if it's like a low amount, right? Like if you have like 40 or 50 bucks, like go ahead and play like 10 to 15 bucks of it. That's not a big deal. But if you have like $1,000 set aside, like you probably shouldn't be betting more than $100 in a night. And personally, I think of that 100, I think it's important to have 80 to 90% of it be in cash games, which would be double ups, 50-50s, and head-to-heads. Head-to-heads is something that I'm like recently exploring, which has kind of been a nice little hedge. And I was honestly inspired by one of our subs who...
Yeah, like, Danny.
Yeah, my boy Danny, one of our subs. He's got a pretty fat role, to be honest with you. And he is like way more confident in my cash lineups than I am. And he loves to basically just literally hunt Sawhill and Chipotle Addict. And like our win percentage head to head against Sawhill is like 80% or something like that.
Yeah, I'm starting to keep track after All-Star break.
Yeah, we're like 6 or 7 in a row against Sawhill in head to head. So, but like even, you know, a few nights where we didn't actually cash in double ups, the head to heads do hit, you know, so it's almost kind of like a hedge within cash.
Yep.
So it's like a safe hedge as opposed to hedging your GPP entries with cash to balance that out. And I think a lot of people kind of romanticize or fall in love with the idea of like hitting the big GPPs as well as even just the quintuple ups, which I personally love too, but those aren't cash games. Like I play my cash lineups in them, But not a lot, you know? And so you got to treat them like a GPP to some extent and know that you're not going to cash them nearly as often.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think sometimes people see multipliers and they think that they're cash games, and it's like, no, I mean, in a cash game, you're talking about a straight up 1-to-1 head to head, or you're talking about a 50-50 where you literally have a coin toss chance of taking that. Yeah, I mean, and you know, the reality is that GPPs are there's a strategic advantage for the quantity that sharks play. And so if you want to be a victim of a shark, then start throwing your money at GPPs, because they're rolling out lineup trains. They're rolling out, you know, massive variance in those different spots just to make sure everything hits, you know. And for normal guys like us who are just kind of trying to grind it out and have fun and be successful, you've got to make to that. I think I'm very much the 80-20 approach. I always try to make sure that what pays out in my cash games will cover my buy-ins, right? So at a minimum, if I take home my 50-50s that night, that you know, I will be plus, even if it's a minimal amount, I will be up on the rest of the money that I put out there, you know. And you know, you can do that math. And I think it's, you know, it's, if you want to be a quality DFS player, you have to do that math on a regular basis and set goals and figure out where you want to be each week and how much you want to spend. So
one of our hockey guy, actually, he's an average Joe, just like all of us. And I met him in Oshkosh. He was giving me the hockey lines to post for our page. And in the middle of December, the lineup he gave us, one line, he does one line a night for cash and GPPs, and he hit the $25 GPP and won 16 grand. And wow, all of our subs had the chance to use that line. So that was pretty crazy.
Like 21 years old and hit like 16 grand.
No, he's like 27, but yeah. But yeah, it's amazing. Like you don't have to, it's easier when you put a 15, 20, 100 lineups, obviously. But when you have that one lineup that just does it and beats all of them, it's got to feel great.
Yeah. Yeah, which if you're grinding on a regular basis, you're going to get there at some point.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so what about, like, variance? You know, we have seen insane numbers, and Joe, you alluded to this, insane numbers, basically, from, you know, after the All-Star break, 315 cash line, you know, in 50-50s alone. What do you think is the best way to treat variance? I mean, are you guys targeting variance in your cash lines, or are you just saying, you know, you roll with the best lineup that you can possibly create, or are you rolling multiple lineups? What's your approach to that?
There are times where I'll roll multiple cash lineups, and I have definitely eaten into what could be some really nice profits by doing that on occasion. Especially if they're not really similar, like if I'm not sticking to a core and pivoting like maybe just two guys or something like that, I'm probably going to be eating into my lineups, given that I'm mostly a cash player. So I try not to take it into account too much, but in regards to like the recent chalk and the recent super high lines, this happens I don't want to say all the time. I remember distinctly last year this happened for like 7 to 10 days or something like that. And cash line was consistently well above 300, and it ticks me off, man. What happens is like FanDuel doesn't really price appropriately. Like when Saric went down in price the other day, I mean, it's just absurd. And then you have like on that exact same evening, on that exact same lineup of games, you have Lowry out, so you have to play Joseph and Rosen.
Yep.
So it just ends up being like one guy different that just makes the entire difference. And all these underpriced guys are hitting like 6-7x, but they're like 70 or 80% owned. And so it drives the line up super high, and it drives me nuts. I actually generally don't do super well in conditions like that. If you give me anywhere between like a 6 and even like an 11 game slate, and like people are generally healthy, you generally have like a pretty clean lineup or pretty clean slate, I'm probably going to cash that 80 plus percent of the time, But when you have like all this crazy stuff going on, like, and you're forced into playing these weird value plays and trash chalk and stuff like that, like, I just absolutely hate it.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. Joe, what's your thought?
It affects the GPPs too, because, you know, when chalk and cash is like the must-haves, like you have to have DeRozan that night and you have to have Joseph and you have to have Saric, or else you're not going to cash a GPP either. So when it gets to that point where you have to use people in GPPs, that's where, like Bear says, it irritates me, because I like to be different. I like to have that person that's under 10% owned and it's 6 or 7X like last year. My favorite player, one of my favorite players, Bojan Bogdanovic, my boy, going, he was like, he's always, you know, around that 4K price. And last year hit like 40 points against Cleveland. And he was less than like 3% owned. And I was like, yeah, I saw that. I saw the project. It was cool to have him. And now it's like, yeah, Saric hit 9X value, but like Bear says, he's owned by 80% of the people. So it's just right. In those times where you have to have those people, it just makes it a little less competitive, I guess, because everybody has the same stuff. So it's frustrating, but it's like Bear says, it happens at 7 to 10 day periods. So it'll eventually balance out and then maybe come back again later in the season.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? You gotta keep playing. I mean, because there are nights when you're a victim of it, and there are nights when it works for you. So, you know, you kind of roll with the punches. I hear that. You know, in my mind, I think every once in a while, just by fading projections more or less, like we talked about earlier, like trusting your gut, knowing that you're going to have a good assessment of the slate and which players should succeed and who you should fade and things like that, by not just, you know, staring at roto grinders and clicking optimize. I think that you end up actually with, you know, on a nightly basis, you're going to end up with, you know, a couple plays here and there that are in that 10% range, which in cash games really can be enough variance for you. I mean, so I think that there is some distinct advantage to, you know, not just like we talked about, not just, you know, using the optimizers and using the tools out there, because everybody has access to those tools, you know? All right, so let's look at this Wednesday slate, because we got a nice slate coming up. You know, I mean, Tuesday's gone with the wind, to quote Skinner.
Real quick, I need to call out Tony Allen. I did not want to play him, and I really need to stop being such a little bitch, because he's got -1.
Oh God! No, you're forcing it, Tony Allen. You're forcing it.
I didn't want to, man. I didn't want to.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to play. I didn't want to play Reggie Jackson. When the Frank the Tank news came out, I got on Reggie Jackson just to try and get off Frank the Tank, which was stupid because Frank still got it. And yeah,
I panicked, man.
Did you guys panic in that too?
I kept Frank.
Did you?
I panicked with, so my line to subs had Frank in it, and then I panicked, and I saw it at like 6:58, and I barely had time, and I switched all mine to Randall instead.
Okay.
And so I guess we'll see how that plays out.
Randall wasn't a bad play, though. You can attack the Charlotte front court.
Oh, yeah, it's still good.
So, like, it could be okay. His minutes are kind of volatile sometimes, so we'll see. Yeah.
They just don't like playing him.
I'm worried that last game is going to be relatively high owned, to be honest with you.
It will be. Yeah. It will be. But that's all right. There was a lot of good value in there.
Westbrook already has 32 before half.
Who's this?
Westbrook has 32 against Utah before half.
Oh, he's a machine.
Wall has 42 starting the fourth, so that's not bad.
The depot
news came out after lock. I swear sometimes it's hard for me to not think that there's some like weird conspiracy where the pros are like paying beat writers. Like, please just tweet this out at 7:02. Thank you.
Dude, please don't give me that. All right, we got 11 games to sift through tomorrow. One of those monster Wednesday TV slates where ESPN has a couple games. What stands out to you here on this slate? Any games that you're targeting, any matchups that at first glance kind of stand out as, you know, that I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, I obviously being, you know, the Cleveland / LeBron fan that I am, I think Boston's going to be trying to send a message to Cleveland a little bit. And so Isaiah Thomas, while he's still pretty expensive, he's down a little bit from where he was peaking. And Kyrie is honestly just kind of trash on defense. And so is Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, both of those guys.
Yeah, so, like, you know, if you're a GPP guy, I could definitely see stacking those two. But Kyrie's a little too expensive for me for cash. Isaiah Thomas, I might think about it, though. So I kind of don't mind that. Just going, like, by position and what I'm seeing and what I like there. I think it's kind of like weird that Wall increased in price. But, you know, Corey Joseph's awful on defense, too, and we know Lowry's out, so.
Yeah. What about you, Joe? What anything stand out first glance here?
I like the Cleveland-Boston game. Kyrie and Isaiah, I do like. Kyrie's getting up there in the 9K price. That's because Love's out, though, too, so he obviously is going to be seeing his price go up until he flatlines. And I notice, like, you touched on the Joseph, so that means, you know, DeRozan. 10-2 tomorrow, so that's pretty steep for DeRozan.
True.
50 points, I mean, he hasn't hit that every day. Maybe with Lowry gone, he can, but I don't see him hitting, like, you know, 60, 70.
He's not.
Versus Washington off of back-to-back.
You know, he just kind of, like, scores points. And, like, ideally you want – if you're going to pay that much for somebody, you want him to be doing, like, a little bit more. You want him to be getting triple-doubles and stuff like that.
He has Washington on a back-to-back, so that's not bad. What catches my eye right now, I just looked at it, Wiggins went down in salary. He's still above 8, but, I mean, he's been balling lately, man. So, like, his last game is 41, 35, 40, 50, 50, 45. So, he can still do, but he's against Utah, which is a slower pace. So, that's going to be a GPP play for sure. We'll see how Utah does tonight, and then coming off of back-to-back, how they can handle Wiggins, and Towns has been killing it, too.
Yeah, I like Blake tomorrow too. That Houston Clippers game is going to be pretty hot. I'm imagining that over under is going to be like 220 plus.
Yep, Houston's been pretty bad against bigs too.
Yeah.
I love Brooklyn all the time, but Sacramento, I don't know, I just don't like them that much without Boogie anymore. So we'll see. That might be a game Brooklyn can win if people are doing those straight up bets. Take Brooklyn. Yep.
I'm also probably locking in Kyle O'Quinn tomorrow in cash.
How did you do the other night?
You know, Orlando is just terrible against bigs. I actually really like Vucevic's game a lot, but he's really bad on defense.
I wish the Knicks played O'Quinn more, man. He's so talented.
Hernan Gomez is doubtful. You know, he's probably not going to be playing. Porzingis is probably going to be back, but I would imagine he might be somewhat limited. And they're not going to play him at the five anyways, I don't think. I guess they might a little bit, but...
he'll definitely be chalked then. If Hernan is out, then he'll be chalked for sure.
Yeah, DeAndre Jordan, Rudy Gobert are guys that I like as far as bigs go, too.
Yeah, as much as I hate to say this, it may be a night to look at Hassan Whiteside against...
I was just about to say that, because, Embiid's still out, Whiteside, he's still good. I mean...
That's a good price, though. I don't, and you're looking at that price, 8.8. I don't love it. I'm not in love with that price. I prefer him closer to that 8.5 range.
He's still got upside at 8.8 against Philly.
Yep. That's probably true. Seth Curry, not appropriately priced given the way he's been using the basketball. You know, we've been attacking Atlanta on the perimeter. Yeah. You know, with the return of Thabo Sefolosha, though, you think. Well, you got to think Sefolosha is going to have to match up with Barnes, and maybe Curry will get that high quality Tim Hardaway defense.
Barnes has been a baller. I think the key is going to be like figuring out who to target in that late night hammer with. So you got Houston and the Clippers is going to be pretty high, but really the tricky one is going to be Brooklyn, Sacramento. Like, both of those teams are kind of trash, but there's a lot of points that are going to be scored there. You just got to figure out who's going to be doing it.
Give me some Willie Cauley-Stein for sure. He's been playing huge minutes.
Yeah.
Still priced pretty well at 5'4". You know, you get a nice layup like that at power forward. You don't have to think too hard about it. I'll take that.
I still like how he went from 40 points to 12 to 30. I thought that was pretty fun.
It makes him a little more GPP for me. I don't know. I wish that Trevor Booker got more minutes because he's honestly just a double-double machine. And I'd like him there because as much as I love Willie Cauley-Stein being my UK guy and stuff, but he's honestly not very good on defense, at least not like on-ball defense.
No.
I don't know. Like Brook Lopez might be in play too.
Oh, that's a game I won't go after. San Antonio and Indiana.
Oh, yeah, God. No, thank you.
The worst. That just sounds, two of the most boring franchises in America compete for a game that no one cares about.
At least one of them's good, though, I guess. Good to their own extent.
You know what's really interesting? Sorry, man. I was just going to say real quickly that Dallas already announced starters for tomorrow.
Really?
And and it looks as though Dirk is going to be at the five again. And, I don't think Noel is listed as a starter as of right now. Which I thought was really weird. Granted, that could change, but
but still.
Well, that puts. I mean, I Dallas is stingy against the center, but Dwight Howard against the worst rebounding team in the league is not the worst thing that you could do.
Yeah. My theory is don't play Dwight Howard unless he's playing Houston or a team he used to play for.
Yeah, so that's actually a great.
Slow. they're so slow. But honestly, Dwight was killing Boston, which was an easy play to make. But then he got ejected on some BS. So
yeah,
look at his game log. The only one that stands out is Portland, and the one that stands out for Dwight is Portland and Houston. Portland obviously is just bad against bigs, and Houston he used to play for. He had 57.
That was a heck of a game, and that was all narrative. So let me run two more plays by you guys, and I'd love your opinions on, and then we'll roll on out of here. Is this the bounce back spot for Nikola Jokic against the Milwaukee front court? Greg Monroe defense is not a real thing. Jokic seems to be doing okay tonight, not all the way back to form, but 20 points at halftime. I mean, I don't want to sleep on this guy. But he's been struggling lately. Do we think we get a bounce back?
Yeah, I think so. Like his struggles lately, like this is where the game log watchers are going to lose out. And like, you know, for someone like Joe, like it's really important to try and this is hard. This is really hard. But like it's so important to get the guy before like literally the game that causes his price to rise for the next game. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's hard to phrase that properly, but I'm thinking like, you know, if you have a guy that's I don't know, he's probably like 9500 tomorrow or something like that. I think if I was looking at that
98 property. I think
so like if he goes off, or he doesn't have a lot of upside at that price, unfortunately. But the reasons that he's been doing poorly lately, like game log watchers won't know that, you know, Malone just messed with his minutes one night. You know, first night back after All-Star break, or maybe second or something like that, like everyone on that team was healthy and he's just like doling out minutes left and right to everyone. So it was just really awkward. Now Fareed's out. And so he's looking pretty good tonight.
Yeah.
I like him tomorrow. Honestly, I do. Especially for a GPP type of play,
you know, his upside, we've seen his upside. So obviously he can ball out. So with Fareed out, that helps him a lot, I think, to get more minutes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bounce back coming here, and I don't know. You know, maybe it's tonight. Maybe it's tonight against the Bulls, and the secret's out. I was going to take the wait and see approach here. All right, here's the other one for you, and I never get this guy right. Rudy Gobert against Karl Anthony Towns.
Man, I really like that a lot because my boy Kat is actually pretty terrible on defense.
Yes.
And like he gets some blocks and stuff like that, but he's honestly not good. Like if you play centers against him, you're probably going to be doing okay. And I was seriously looking at that just a minute ago, and he's like, Gobert is so consistent for cash.
Mm-hmm.
He has like he's got such a nice floor, and he's got some potential for upside. Like people might be on him because he recently put up like a 50 burger, I think, against Washington, maybe.
Yeah.
And I really liked him that night too, but. As lame as this is, I could probably count on one hand the number of times I've played Gobert. Sometimes I just kind of get in a rhythm with like guys I target and have been successful with, and he just has never been on there, and I don't have a good reason for it. But I think he's a nice play tomorrow.
Gobert is kind of like Marc Gasol, where he'll always get you 40 or close to at least, which is 5x his value, which is nice. And then he has those games where he does do really well. Like, I had him when he went against Dallas on January 20th, and he scored 62. That was really nice. But he had 25 rebounds that night. So when he gets those crazy rebound nights, like when he went against Washington last game, had 20 rebounds, that's when you start to see him hit the 50 and 60 mark. So if he can rebound like he does almost always, 15, 16, 17 rebounds, then he's great. At 8,000, then he's great.
By the way, can we just acknowledge real quick that his nickname is just fantastic, the Stifle Tower?
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
And I just lost it. I was like, yeah, that's amazing.
You have brought that to me. That is wonderful. All right. Well, hey, fellas, it is absolutely been a pleasure to have you guys. And honestly, the advice about projections and cash games, I think, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people need to hear. They want to hear. No question in my mind. So I appreciate you guys coming up. Where can they find your content, your lineups, follow you guys on Twitter?
They can follow both of us. I'm at Average Joe DFS.
Yep, and I'm at Big Bear DFS.
And together we are at Average Bear DFS.
That was very Captain Planet of you, Joe. Well, he's done.
I'm the hype man.
The heart. I think he's too young to understand that was kind of a diss.
You know, it was sort of a diss, but I mean, hey, we all like Captain Planet. We got, you know, a soft spot for Captain Planet.
Who wouldn't want a monkey running around with them? You know, the heart's pretty dope.
I'm the monkey.
That's it, man. All right, guys. Well, hey, it has been absolutely excellent. Follow these men on Twitter. Wonderful follows for DFS takes. And hey, if you need some lines, you know where to subscribe. Guys, I appreciate you coming on. Good luck tonight. You guys will probably end up, you'll end up all right. You didn't have a KD like I did. So.
He was a good play. Thanks a lot for having us, Sean. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. That's been great. By the way, Russell Westbrook ended half with 35.
Good gracious.
Against, yeah, he's on his way.
Against Utah, yeah. Don't play him against Utah. God,
wow.
All right, boys. Hey, it's been great. Good luck tonight, and I'll keep in touch. We'll do this again sometime.
That was great. Thank you.
All right.